As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to The View from the Lane, our Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. My name is Jack Pitbrook and I'm joined again today by Charlie Eccleshare and James Moore. Well, this is a very different podcast from the one that I was expecting us to do after 81 minutes of yesterday's game when Tottenham were 3-0 up. Charlie, did you have any idea at all at that point that this might happen?
No, none. Rarely when a team's 3-0 up do you feel uncertain. You probably do if they're only two goals up, but at three goals, no. And unless, as James has alluded to on Twitter, unless it's Spurs United in 2001. But I don't think even the more pessimistic, fatalistic Tottenham fans, and there is obviously a lot of competition for that title, would have really based on any sort of rationality, been thinking that they were vulnerable. I mean, yes, if they were 3-0 up against, say, Liverpool or City, then yeah, of course, you'd be really nervous. But this was a game that was just really drifting away. I mean, it was 3-0. Spurs were doing that thing of making subs spaced out to kind of just run the clock down as much as possible. You know, there would have been a declaration probably if it had been cricket. It was done. It was completely finished. Sometimes when I'm at the games, I'll have a headphone in just so I can listen to what's being said in commentary. And I did that. And when the first goal went in to make it 3-1, I was kind of surprised because the commentators, to be fair to them, I think it was Rob Hawthorn was the main commentator, was like, game on, you know, West Ham are right back in this. And I was thinking, like, really? Like, they're not. Like, you're trying to generate some interest when there just isn't any because clearly this game's finished. Shows what I know because they did come back into it. But yeah, it just wasn't on. And even just before, Kane had that one that hit the post that would have made it 4-0. So it completely took me by surprise.
For a limited time only, we're offering you the chance to subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 per month. You can read all of our articles on Spurs and so much more. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod to sign up. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod and pay just £1 per month.
These kind of things with Spurs should never surprise you. I know it's been a few years probably since the last time this kind of thing happened. I was just trying to think before we started recording when the last time Spurs kind of blew a lead in quite so spectacular a fashion would be. Because if anything, the more recent one, I guess, would be coming back from 3 goals down against Ajax, right? As we've talked about many times. So off the top of my head, I can't think of the last time Spurs blew a 3-goal lead. But obviously, you know, you mentioned that Man United game in 2001 and there was the
City one, wasn't
it? FA Cup game, which, I mean, in a way was worse. Because obviously, you know, again, City were not a particularly strong team in that moment, and also they'd gone down to 10 men at half time, and they were without their best player, Nicolas Anelka, who'd gone off injured. So, 2 or 3 years ago, I would have been very, very comfortable at 3-0 after 16 minutes, and I would have been very, very confident that was that, because you would have felt they had the defensive solidity to see that out, whatever happens. But having seen what we've seen over the last year, 18 months, There always was that element of doubt in my mind, even when Spurs were flying forward and playing really good football on the attack on the front foot. Charlie's written a piece about what happened in those last 10 minutes with a little bit of detail on the rest of the game as well. And you've mentioned that, you know, Sanchez gives the ball away stupidly in the first kind of 20 seconds. So Spurs go 1-0 up after 46 seconds. But even in that time, they've still managed to look a little bit shaky. And Antonio had a really good chance at 1-0, didn't he? The kind of volley from the corner that he sort of mishit and went wide. Spurs were very good going forward in that first 20 minutes. I mean, obviously, you can't pretend that didn't happen. But West Ham were always kind of... They looked threatening through the game, didn't they? I mean, I don't think there was ever a point in that game where Spurs had a complete handle on how West Ham were playing going forward. You know, I looked at the stats from that first 17 minutes when Spurs scored the three goals, and West Ham had three shots as well, and two of them were decent chances of the free kick as well from Cresswell,
yeah.
Yeah, it was a decent effort.
I think you're right, and I think we talked about it after the game, didn't we, that it felt, though, at 3-0 like they'd weathered a bit of a storm. Because yeah. I totally know what you mean. Once one went in, then you're thinking, oh, maybe something. But at 3-0, at that point, you must have felt pretty secure.
So, like I said to you last night, you know, they had a kind of 15-20-minute spell at the start of the second half where they had that 4-0 header over the bar. They had a lot of the ball, but Spurs were kind of defending relatively well. And then after kind of 20 minutes, so, you know, 65 minutes or so into the game, it felt like they'd weathered that storm. And I was actually quite happy that had happened, because it felt like if they're going to get a clean sheet, you want them to work for it. You want them to be put on the back foot a little bit. You want them to, you know, you don't want them to kind of cruise through the game. You want them to have worked for it. And yeah, and then that kind of second wave, to perhaps use a very poorly chosen phrase, came in the last 10 minutes. And like I say, I always had a feeling that, and you know, this is a classic pessimist Spurs fan, and it happens all the time, that once I got the first goal, that then Spurs would have a bit of a wobble, which I don't think I would have had 2 or 3 years ago. I think if it had been 2 or 3 years ago and you'd seen that happen, I think they would have, you know, they would have knuckled down and been more resolute and not panicked and kept the ball a bit better. But, you know, it kind of... To say it was inevitable, I think, would be over-egging it a little bit from 3-1. But I was certainly concerned at that point. And obviously, to concede the second goal straight away instantly changes the whole dynamic of the game. And it gave West Ham so much belief. And for all the talk of it sort of being a bit of a freak, in terms of the way they scored the third goal, which is a bit of a hit and hope from Lanzini, really, with all due respect. If it hasn't gone back to 3-2 in the last minute of the game, then whatever happens there, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Charlie, you've done a really interesting piece that we just launched on The Athletic earlier today about how exactly those three goals went in. And you made a really interesting point about the type of free kicks that Spurs are giving away and the ill discipline that shows.
Yeah, I mean, I was struck by just how similar. I mean, the first and third goal are basically the first one. Sissoko gives away an entirely needless free kick down the right. And then on the third goal, Aurier does something similar in a really similar position. And it was soft, and we can debate whether it was or it wasn't a free kick. But you know that a player in that position is basically looking for any tiny amount of contact and they'll go down. And these weren't isolated incidents. Like in that Everton game where Spurs lost to a set piece, a very similar set piece to the one with which West Ham scored their first goal. Richarlison has the ball. He's completely going nowhere. Spurs have Doherty coming to close him down. Alderweireld's behind him. There's no Everton player within about 20 yards. And in the piece, I screenshot it. And there are six Spurs players in shot to two Everton ones. And anyway, Alderweireld, again, can't resist, gives away a little foul. Everton score. And against Newcastle in the, you know, obviously a ludicrous penalty. And you could argue it's a harsh free kick against Højbjerg on Joelinton. But Joelinton plays the pass away. It's a really loose pass. Winks intercepts it. There's no need for Højbjerg to go anywhere near him. And it's cost Spurs. You know, that's turned, you know, take away those goals. And obviously, we don't know what would have happened in the Everton game. That was still in the mix. But those West Ham and Newcastle games were games they should have won comfortably. They were so, so superior to their opponents. And for them to come away with only 2 points rather than six from those games is crazy. And then, obviously, so that kind of covers off the first and third goal to an extent. And then the second, James mentioned, I mean, I felt Sanchez was shaky all game. And he did, in the first 30 seconds, he gives the ball away with a really loose pass. And then like 3 minutes later, he goes barreling into Antonio in exactly the sort of way that one does when one's a little bit insecure, over anxious, not feeling totally confident, worried about an opposition attacker. He comes barreling in, fouls him, and Crespo nearly scores from the free kick. And I don't want to dig Sanchez out because, you know, other players made mistakes as well. And, you know, again, we can debate Davinson Sanchez, how good we think he is. He obviously made the mistake in the last game as well to give away a pretty needless penalty. So the own goal itself, I don't think is like a terrible mistake. His position isn't that bad, but I don't think it would have surprised anyone who was watching that game if they'd been told after those first 5 minutes that Sanchez had a mistake in him. So I think it's you know, when something like this happens, you generally look and say, was this a complete freak? You know, was it just an aberration that's never going to happen again? Or is it a reflection of something wider? And when you think as well that Tottenham have played 10 games in a row now, going back to the last game of last season, and not kept a clean sheet. And, you know, in that time, they've played Lokomotiv Plovdiv, Shkendia, Maccabi Haifa, Crystal Palace, who yesterday, you know, didn't have a shot besides a penalty. You know, they haven't been playing kind of world-class attacking teams. And this does, you know, you go back to Jose Mourinho's very first game, and perhaps there was a portent there because obviously they were 3-0 up against West Ham, came back to 3-2 on that occasion, and they hung on for the victory. But they're just not keeping very many clean sheets under Mourinho. It's 7, I think, in his 44 matches. And obviously that's why they spent the summer desperately trying to bring in a centre-back, which they eventually did with Joe Roden last Friday. So yeah, I mean, it's always hard to make sense of something that is on the face of it, just a kind of freakish one-off. But I do think the incidents themselves aren't complete one-offs. You know, they have been happening before, and it's something Mourinho will obviously be aware of and desperate to try and cut out.
I really worry about Sanchez. I mean, just going back to what you were saying, Charlie, about making a pretty bad mistake very early in the Manchester United game and being totally let off the hook by how badly Manchester United played in the red card and how well Kane and Son played. An emphatic victory, and everyone can forget about that penalty. But then to start the next game, as you say, with that terrible hoik up the line to Suchek in the first 25 seconds, and then to give away that free kick in a dangerous position like a couple of minutes later. I don't think it's overrating it to suggest that he is lacking confidence at the moment. I don't think we're reading too much into it to say that. And I'm kind of struggling to see like how he's going to turn that around. Do you know what I mean? Because previously it felt like he was when he was playing well, he was playing well, like playing alongside like an experienced centre-back. He was in good form. He was confident and could lead, be that Vertonghen or Alderweireld. But Alderweireld is... it's a shadow of the player he was 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, I don't think it's unfair to say that. And for whatever reason, I mean, I don't think you would watch that game back yesterday and say that he made any one particularly horrendous mistake. But he just didn't look like he had any confidence in what he was doing, like he really had any belief in what he was doing. Like, the clearances he was making were all kind of half-hearted. It didn't really feel like he was kind of leading or organising that defence. You know, the best defensive intervention made in that game was made by Harry Kane in the first half, right? That block on the shot from Bowen. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous. Now, Harry Kane is probably the best centre forward, the best midfielder, and the best centre back in that team. He's probably the second best goalkeeper in the squad. I mean, yeah. It is nonsense. I mean, what must he be thinking? I mean, he was incredible in that game, absolutely incredible. A couple of the balls that he played, he scored a really good goal where he's nutmegged Rice, which in any other week we would spend the whole hour talking about, or I would spend the whole hour talking about. He's got a really good goal. Set up Son with a fantastic ball for the first goal. Obviously, he played an amazing ball to Bergwijn in the build up to the second goal as well, and scored a decent header for the third goal. And that's what we should be talking about, an incredible captain's performance from Harry Kane, including that block as well for later on in the first half. But he's just been totally let down by the absolute... I can't even describe it. I mean, it is absolutely pathetic. It is. It's terrible.
The problem that they've got is that Sanchez... Like, the team is very dependent on Sanchez. Like, Sanchez has started 7 out of the 9 games so far this season, and clearly Mourinho doesn't think that he can cope without his pace in the back line. And that, I mean, it might well be that Roden is an alternative to Sanchez and means that they don't have to play Sanchez every week, but There's no, I don't see how this team could work without him at the moment. And I mean, and obviously without Eric Dier, I mean, they have to play Alderweireld. And frankly, the decision to give Alderweireld that 3.5 year deal, like less than a year ago, is not looking especially good at the moment. I don't think he's anywhere near the player he was sort of 3 years ago.
I mean, to regret it since he signed that deal, I'm not suggesting it's why it's happened, but he's worse now than he was when he signed the contract.
He is. Maybe it would have been better with Eric Dier in the team. I don't know. But it's you know, this was traditionally, this was always meant to be the great strength of Mourinho teams, was how well organised they are at the back. And yet they are, it's not good and it's not really getting any better. One thing, a player we should mention before we get on, I mean, we will get on to the good bits of the game, but I just want to talk about Gareth Bale. Charlie, what was it like when he came on and what did you make of his cameo?
It was the first time since going to games behind closed doors that you've been really aware that there are at least a bunch of people around you, because when he came on, there were claps all around from kind of Tottenham staff members and that kind of thing. So there was, you know, a little, sort of shred of an atmosphere. Obviously, you know, it was nothing to be compared with what it would have been like when he came on, but there was at least some recognition of it. You know, it would have seemed so strange if there hadn't been. And the announcer, I mean, it was eerie because, you know, he said something like, "And welcome back Gareth Bale to this kind of empty, cavernous ground." I mean, he was okay. He gave the ball away. I can't remember if it was after the first or the second goal when things started to get a bit ragged. And then he so nearly scored, which would have been a really special goal, actually. You know, he had to weave his way past a few defenders. He was unlucky not to score there. You know, I thought he did fine. But it was a very different cameo from what we were expecting, because when he came on at 3-0 up, you know, you thought it would be one of those where it was, you know, very breezy, bit of fun, go and try a few things with 3-0 up. Then obviously it became a whole lot more serious than that. But I mean, it's so early to judge, but definitely encouraging signs.
Was he unlucky with that shot, or should he have scored? I mean, he was through one-on-one with the goalkeeper on the edge of the box, right? He should have hit the target, surely. I mean, I'm not hammering him and saying it's his fault that Spurs completely collapsed in those 20 minutes he was on the pitch. But, I mean, obviously it's going to be a bit different if he puts that in the back of the net and it's 4-2.
Yeah, I feel like just because he's going down as he hits it, kind of giving him slight mitigation. But yeah, he should score. I mean, he does make the chance himself. I mean, the other thing you could say if you were being extremely harsh is, should he be running that into the corner, given Spurs were defending a lead? And I know that's not necessarily something we want to see, but in the realm of being intelligent, you know what, that might be the sort of thing that a more streetwise, for want of a better word, team would do. I don't know. That's probably being ultra critical, but these things make a difference.
Also, do you think that shot he had was one of those where, because he got a shot off, it couldn't have been a penalty, whereas it could have been a penalty because it was quite a reckless tackle on Bale.
Was it two check? He had two hands on him, didn't he? I mean, like, it sort of seems a bit churlish to say Spurs get a better penalty at 3-2, given what happened. But yeah, maybe. I mean, also, for what it's worth, the free kick that they got right at the end, the one that Snodgrass won, I wasn't particularly convinced by either. It kind of seemed to me like he put himself between Aurier and the ball with the intention of falling over, and that's pretty much exactly what happened. So I thought that was probably a little bit generous too, but there you go.
Yeah, it was. I think just every team does those sort of things, and you just have to be so careful in that sort of situation.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's have another look back at the good stuff, because it was, it was a pretty good Spurs performance in some ways. And in the first bit of the first half, they were absolutely electric, and it just felt like a continuation of the Manchester United game. James, you were saying how good you thought Kane was. Do you think this was like comparable to the United and Southampton games in terms of just how well Kane and Son clicked?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I mean, some of the balls that Kane dropped off and played in that first half were pretty incredible. I mean, it's probably a more of a, like an all-round performance than that Southampton performance, where he was kind of, you'd say, like sort of relentlessly doing the same thing over and over again, and obviously it came off like three or four times. And the Manchester United game, you know, again, obviously he played very well, but I don't think he was quite as involved as he was in that sort of first 20 minutes or so yesterday. So yeah, I mean, you know, obviously that is the big positive you would look at and say that relationship between Kane and Son looks like it's going to get. Looks like you're going to be able to create opportunities and goals against more or less anyone. And let's not forget, you know, as much as we might like to say the Spurs should be beating teams like West Ham, and obviously they should, but, you know, West Ham in their previous two games had beaten, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was 1-3-0 at Leicester, and then before that beat Wolves 4-0 at home, right? So, you know, they've absolutely smashed two decent teams in the two previous games, and, they, you know, they played well at Arsenal and lost 2-1. And we were incredibly unlucky to lose that game. So, you know, it's not like they're complete chumps in the broader sense. I mean, obviously they are a bunch of chumps. but yeah, they're not a terrible side at the moment. So, you know, perhaps there was a little bit of complacency and cockiness there from Spurs, maybe in that sense that they thought it was going to be an easy game and it was going to be won, and the West Ham were just going to wilt or give up. And you know, credit to them, they didn't do that. They kept going. You know, it sounds, you know, from listening to the Moyes quotes after the game, and I think he was right to say this, he didn't really change much. He thought his team played quite well in the first half. And to be fair, you know, for all the fantastic attacking play from Spurs, West Ham looked like a threat, and they mostly kept their shape by those couple of errors for those first two goals. I didn't think they were terrible in the first half, West Ham, really, even though they were 3-0 down. I suspect they felt they were quite unlucky to be that far behind. I mean, I'm sure, you know, they suspected they would probably lose from that point. But I, the fact that they didn't feel they needed to deviate from what they'd done in the first half is probably an indication that they hadn't been terrible.
Charlie, what are your main standout memories of that first half? It feels like a long time ago now.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it was honestly, I mean, firstly, I would agree with you, James. I was surprised Carragher was saying at the start of the second half, you know, that it was one of those awful halves for West Ham. And yeah,
I really didn't agree with that.
Yeah, I just didn't think that was the case. That wasn't the game I was watching. But there were a lot of things. Kane was sensational. And just watching him closely and the way he was moving around, it was a player so confident and at ease with himself and everything. It just looked like almost playground football when you've got a guy coming from, you know, he's a couple of years above or whatever, or he's just clearly the best guy in the year at school, just so much better than everyone else. And he's almost just like strolling around the playground, talking to people, getting the ball, spraying off a perfect pass. Like, he just looked such a cut above. It was so, so impressive. Just dropping into pockets of space. And Dombele as well played really, really well. And I love his pass to Kane in the build-up to that first goal. It's one of those that has the perfect weight on it. Just tells Kane kind of, you know, it's such a progressive pass. It looks like a kind of straight ball, but it's so much more than that. He also did a couple of turns that, you know, lost West Ham players and kind of, I sort of make these noises of approval. Things like that really stood out. And you know, they were 3-0 up after 16 minutes. And look, I'll be honest, I was thinking, you know, this, and I don't think I was the only one. My Twitter timeline and messages from friends was basically saying, like, you know, Spurs could win the league, right? Spurs are in the hunt. I mean, why can't they win the league? And it didn't seem that ridiculous. And you know, they still are. But to answer that question of why aren't they in the hunt or why wouldn't they, obviously those last 8 minutes did give an indication, you know, in the lack of clean sheets. But going forward, they are going to score a lot of goals. I don't really see that many teams being able to shut them out.
I mean, how many teams can defend in the Premier League at the moment? Who do you look at Premier League and say they can defend? You know, especially when you factor in Van Dijk being injured now as well. I mean, incredibly, Manchester City almost maybe look like the most, like, competent team defensively, maybe, and they conceded 5 goals against Leicester 3 games ago.
Yeah. I mean, Spurs have conceded 8, and, you know, the fewest anyone's conceded is Arsenal 6, then you've got a few teams 7.
And what about, how many have Aston Villa conceded?
Villa have conceded 2, sorry, yeah.
That's less than 6.
That is less than 6.
Third of 6.
but they have played a fewer game. But yeah, I don't, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't imagine Villa will necessarily keep that up. But yeah, I think...
they probably won't, but I mean, let's show them respect.
That would mean them conceding 19 goals over the course of the season.
Just two other things that stood out to me from the game. One is, yeah, I thought Ndombele was brilliant. There was that pass inside Masuaku to the overlapping one of Aurier, which was absolutely sick.
Oh, yes, that was a beauty.
And then also on Kane, like... So Nathan Clark, who I don't know if you follow on Twitter, but it's well worth a follow. He said during the game something which I've been thinking for a while, which is that as much as we go on about how good Kane is in this number 10 position, and he's changing his game and he's these brilliant passes, I think he actually does look as good as ever, if not better, at getting shots away in difficult positions from the edge of the box. The one that stood out to me as an example before yesterday was Crystal Palace away on the last day of last season, the 26th of July, which is kind of a goal forgotten by history a bit. But it was really, really good, the way he kind of jinked in between two people and smashed his shot in. But yesterday was even better, the way that he nutmegged Rice. So I thought that was brilliant as well.
The timing of his runs is so good as well.
Yeah.
Coming on things from deeper positions.
Like, there have been times in the last year or two, particularly when he's been coming back from an injury or whatever, where he has looked a bit heavy-legged and he doesn't seem to quite have that same, like, burst and sharpness. And even in the England, you know, this shows how reactive people are with England performances. Like, even in the England game against Denmark last week, there were people saying, oh, Kane doesn't look right, he doesn't look sharp. You know, because he's just coming off the back of not being able to start in the previous game against Belgium. And yet, yesterday I just watched him and thought, you know, admittedly on television, I watched him and thought, he's just playing so well, like you said, Charlie. Like, he's just completely on top of his game. And it did, and the, like, my overall impression of the game is obviously, like, I appreciate the fact that James and Spurs fans everywhere are going through absolute agony right now. And, you know, I feel that and I empathise. But if Spurs play like that all season, they will win far more games than they lose, won't they? Like, the good bits were representative of the good football that Spurs can play. And the bad bits were a bit unlucky, weren't they? Am I being too optimistic?
I don't know if it's pessimism or logic, but I would suggest that you're probably not going to be able to play as well as that going forward. Like, as well as they played in that sort of game and a half against Manchester United and the first half against West Ham, you're probably not going to maintain that for the duration of the season. Whereas I think it's far more likely you're going to continue to not be able to defend. That would be my worry.
Yeah, although there are a lot of players still, you know, like Bale still to settle. They have other options.
The interesting thing is, I think we talked a couple of weeks ago about, it might have been after the Southampton game, we talked about that kind of Jurgen Klopp early kind of first 2 years rock and roll football, and the fact that Liverpool team could never control a game. They just couldn't ever set the tempo. It was like hell for leather constantly. They couldn't kill a game off. They'd have to keep attacking because they couldn't just put their foot on the ball and knock it around and just like and dictate the tempo. It was madness. And it kind of feels like Spurs that's where Spurs are now. Like, they're brilliant going forward and they can score a lot of goals. But they're a bit of a mess at the back, and they can't without the Celso in the team, they can't really set the tempo. They can't really like slow a game down and kill it that way. They can only really kill it by going like 4 or 5 goals up.
I guess the encouraging, again, depends on how you want to frame it, but you know, you would think Mourinho, given his experience, will be able to. It's like, would you be more worried if they weren't attacking well, given that that's been a failure of other Mourinho teams? Or would you be more worried they can't defend? Because you think, like, Mourinho should be able to fix that. So if they can maintain that attacking threat, and I know what you're saying, James, that maybe that's a worry that they can't. And maybe this is a bit, you know, the scoring 7 and 6 and then 3 is the outlier. But you would think eventually, you know, Mourinho will be able to sort this defence out. And he now has, you know, he has players like Doherty, Reguilon, Roden, who've all come in under his watch. You know, this is very much becoming his defence. Maybe that's being optimistic. Well. Tanganga, yeah, I mean, I was going to mention Tanganga. I mean, you think with him and Roden, there is a real opportunity for both of them, or at least one of them, because, as we said, there isn't really, you know, Mourinho's been chopping and changing between Dier, Alderweireld and Sanchez this season, back end of last. Doesn't feel like, I mean, Dier and Sanchez is the first choice, but I wouldn't say they've made themselves undroppable by any means. Certainly not Sanchez, as we discussed. So you know, and I think a lot of the fan base would love to see Tanganga and Roden get more, you know, playing more games. So maybe that is something we'll see more of, depending on how things pan out the next few weeks.
Just want to do, just before we move on to Joe Roden, I just got one more question about the game. One thing that I thought, and I can't be the only one as I was watching it, is, oh my God, what would this have been like if the stadium had been full of fans? Do you know what I mean? Like, it just would have been... James, you've got a theory on this, haven't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, it's kind of like, you know, what would have happened if that goal had gone in that minute of the game? Because, like, everything is completely different. So you can't really say, you know, that the game would have gone in a certain particular way. We don't really know. But my instinct is that if Spurs had gone 3-0 up in that game in 16 minutes, they wouldn't have been allowed to ease off in the way that they did in the kind of hour or so that followed. I just don't think, like, you know, I don't think the crowd would have accepted them sort of passively knocking the ball around. I mean, I'm sure it would have been fine. It wouldn't have been like they would have been booing or aggro or whatever. But I kind of feel like there would have been so much like encouragement and like emotion from the crowd that it would have kind of forced them on to kind of attack a bit more. I'm not necessarily saying they wouldn't have blown it, but I do wonder whether they might have been a bit more sort of driven to go for a fourth goal or a fifth goal or whatever and completely put West Ham to the sword. In a way that, yeah, there just probably wasn't the drive to do in an empty stadium.
But then the flip side of that is that I can imagine if...
The tension at 3-1, though, I mean, it would have been even more intense after that.
Exactly. So I can imagine if they'd gone from 3-0 to 3-3, we might be saying, well, you know, that's just them responding to the anxiety of the fans who were completely having kittens, whereas without them, they could be more measured and calm. And actually, they weren't. They played like a team who did have 60,000 really anxious fans biting their fingernails and kind of wincing at every misplaced pass.
My one last point on that, that collapse yesterday, is that's going to be a thing that is going to affect Spurs in the next kind of couple of months in more or less every single game. Because I think now, like, you know, let's say they go to Burnley on Monday night and they're 2-0 up with 15 minutes to go. But Burnley aren't going to just throw in the towel, are they? They're going to absolutely go for it in those last 15 minutes. And that's going to be playing on the mind of all 22 players on the pitch what happened on Sunday afternoon. So the Burnley players are going to keep plugging away in the knowledge that if they get one back, Spurs are going to absolutely cack themselves. And the Spurs players are going to be there thinking, oh, bloody hell, we can't do it again, can we? And it's going to be all they're going to be able to think about. So, and that's not going to go away if they win 2-0 at Burnley. It'll be in the next game against whoever it is. Sorry, Brighton, isn't it? I think the following game. And that's just, it's going to be a thing that's going to haunt them for a little while. It's going to be, you know, maybe even for the whole season. You can't escape that. It's going to give encouragement to other teams. And it's going to haunt the Spurs players.
Could I just ask you guys what you think of, given that after 81 minutes of yesterday's game, it didn't seem a ludicrous thought to be talking about Tottenham as title challengers, where now that that last 8-9 minutes plus stoppage time has happened, what do you think of that?
I kind of feel like that has kind of indicated why they're probably going to not be in that shake-up come the end of the season. I just think, you know, having said no one else in the league can defend, you know, it's a pretty big statement to say that Spurs' defence isn't good enough to compete. But I do think that as it stands, I mean, unless Joe Roden comes into the team and is an immediate success and, you know, he's a big, I think he's decent in the air. I'm not sure he's massively quick. I mean, are we faster than Alderweireld and Dyer, I guess. But I just don't see them being able to grind out enough games when they're not playing well. I think they're going to have to play. They have to play brilliantly going forward in every single game, I think, to have any chance of probably even coming in a top four at the moment.
Honestly, I think Tottenham can win the league. This is the strangest season in modern football history. The football is getting stranger, not less strange. That much has been clear from the results in the last few weeks. Of the two teams who dominated English football in the last 3 years, City. I have no idea how good they are or not. Sometimes I think they're having a kind of Pochettino final season effect and the players are exhausted at Guardiola. That said, I thought they were pretty good against Arsenal. Liverpool conceded 7 goals against Aston Villa before they lost Virgil van Dijk for most of the season. And I have no idea how they will be able to cope without him. Although, again, obviously, they've got the best attacking players and they should still be very good going forward. United and Chelsea, you know... I've said on previous podcasts why I don't think they're any good. And then Everton have got no experience at the top end of the table. It's going to be an incredibly open season. And I think all of our
everything that we think we know about football and what to expect between now and the rest of the season, I think, can go out the window. Like, you know, there aren't going to be, I think it's pretty clear that there are not going to be fans in the Premier League in any serious numbers over the course of this season. So I think all the strangeness that we've seen recently will only continue. It's a ridiculous calendar. It's going to demand more physically from the players than ever before. And I think it's an incredibly high variance season. Now, I know Spurs have already thrown away 4 stupid points this season already. If they'd taken those points, they'd be second, I think. But I haven't seen anything to suggest that they're not capable of the levels of performance required to get up to the top. Like, I've got no idea what's going to happen this season, but the possibilities are so broad that I wouldn't rule Spurs being the best team in the country by the end of the season out of it. This is going to look ridiculous if Spurs end up finishing 9th, but then, you know, I do think that everything is on the table.
If you're going to come back to us and listen to this in like 6-7 months' time, can you just tweet at Jack, not me, because I've said plenty rubbish.
Yeah, well, that is the power of talking about Spurs while not being a Spurs fan, is that I know that if I was a Spurs fan, I would be, like, to say this would sound a bit sacrilegious, but given that I'm not a Spurs fan, I can, like, risk the wrath of the gods myself without it really coming back to bite me in quite the same way. Do you know what I mean?
Without that need for the purposeful pessimism I was talking about a couple of weeks
ago.
Yeah,
right,
which
exactly.
Is just, you know, the staple of all football fans.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Spurs have got 2 games to come before our next podcast, starting this Thursday with LASK Linz of Austria in the Europa League group stage. Now, I don't know much about LASK Linz. The one thing I do know is that they played Manchester United in the last 16 of the Europa League last year. 2 legs that were separated by 21 weeks, because the first leg was just before the coronavirus lockdown in March. And the second leg was in August, after the Premier League had resumed, completed the season, and then finished. Guys, help me out here. LASK Linz?
I would just say a kind of cautionary note on that, because obviously they got battered by United, so it's easy to think of them as being, you know, potentially lightweight. But they've had some really good results, actually. And to qualify, they beat Sporting Lisbon 4-1 away. They beat PSV 4-1 last season. So I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously that sometimes, you go into a European game and the team's had some good results, and then they sort of flatter to deceive on the night. But I think that'll be a decent side. Just from speaking to Laurie Whitwell, who he covers United for The Athletic, you know, he was saying they are pretty vulnerable to pace, and that was what happened certainly in that 5-0 game. And that would worry you, I think, you know, given they'll be up against potentially Son Heung-min, Gareth Bale, although, you know, we expect Mourinho will shuffle his pack. I would make Tottenham the favourites, especially as they're at home. I think for a lot of Spurs fans, you know, one of the most interesting things will be the team selection and the extent to which Mourinho does shuffle his pack. I mean, he's got so many options available, to the extent that, you know, Dele Alli couldn't even get on the bench yesterday. Hopefully Lamella and Lo Celso, who have been injured, will be back. And then, you know, guys like Moura, hopefully Bale starting, and then, you know, various other players like Ben Davis, Doherty didn't play. I mean, he could genuinely make 11 changes and still have a really good side. So it'll be interesting. I mean, what do we think on that as well? Like, some teams have gone down the route of completely flipping their teams from Europe and the league. Like, would you be up for that? I mean, just, you know, making 11 changes, say?
Yeah, and broadly speaking, I think that's probably what you want to do when you can. I mean, obviously, I guess the thing we have to factor in is Tanganga going to be fit? I'm not entirely sure.
Don't think so.
And if you know, Tanganga, Dyer aren't fit, obviously Roden, we know you can't play in Europe. So actually, you might not really have many options at centre back to change it up.
True.
I guess the one thing with this particular game is that the following league game is on the Monday night rather than like the Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
So it probably gives you a little bit more scope to go slightly stronger, which, I don't know, given it's the first game, perhaps not a bad idea. You want to get 3 points on the board, don't you, and kind of set your stall out. So, yeah, I reckon we'll probably make sort of 5 or 6 changes, leave a few of the key players in there, maybe like a sort of Højbjerg or someone in there as well. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, Lamella, it sounds like he'll probably be fine to come back. I don't know whether Lucas will play the full game. Yeah, and having said that, obviously there's Bale as well. Like you say, maybe you want to get more minutes in his legs. Vinicius, obviously, you're going to want to see.
Yeah, Vinicius, that's the exciting one, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. Like a new centre-forward player. It'll be the first time Spurs have had... Sunday was the first time Spurs had had 2 centre-forwards in their 18 since the European Cup final, right?
Yeah, 2 established ones. Troy Parrott has
When
I tweeted that out, I did have to use that word established because I knew otherwise I would have Parrott against Burnley, mate.
Can either of you tell me the last time Tottenham played an Austrian team?
Who's an Austrian? Is it going to be like 1984 or something like that?
It's not far off.
Well, I mean, I'm guessing it's before that because then Spurs weren't in Europe after that for like 20 years, so 10 years.
No, it's actually after that.
Okay, go on.
It's not in the Soto Cup, is it, in 95?
No, it's in a real competition.
Ooh. Disrespectful to Adam Pardew.
I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of this team before I saw them on Wikipedia about 2 minutes ago. And their Wikipedia doesn't make it look like they've done anything at all since this game. So if you got this, that'd be very impressive. Well, hey. No, so in the qualifying round of the Cup Winners' Cup in 1991-92, Spurs played SV Stockerau. They won both legs 1-0. First leg, goal from Gordon Drury. Second leg, goal from Gary Mabbutt. So...
And look out for our retrospective on that game on The Athletic coming to you this week.
Has anyone got good Yuri's phone number?
I'm heading to Stockerau. I hope it's not on the travel. I hope it's on the travel corridor list.
It will be worth it. The 2 week quarantine for that feature will be well worth it.
And then, so quickly looking forward to Burnley next Monday night. This feels like the kind of game that, you know, in this kind of pre coronavirus era would have been very difficult, but playing an empty turf moor obviously isn't so difficult. Burnley's results over the last few months have been pretty poor. They've lost their first 3 league games of this season. We are recording before the game against West Brom on Monday night, so I suppose they could win that and then set themselves up for the Spurs game. But I think Spurs should be able to win that game fine.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they, you know, the equivalent fixture last season, they got battered for the first half and then came back into it. And that was actually just before the lockdown. And that was when they were missing Son and Kane. And I think Lo Celso could only do a half. I think he came on for the second half. It was the game and Ndombele was hooked at half time. So you would think, and obviously football doesn't work like this, but they've got a far, far stronger team than then. And Burnley, as you say, are not in the best of shape. So you'd make them the favourites. But it's hard to predict these kinds of games, especially like a week out. Because, you know, if Thursday goes catastrophically wrong, then, you know, could be a different complexion on the game from a Spurs perspective.
I mean, you look at those next 6 games, you know, LASK, Burnley, Antwerp, Brighton, Ludogorets, West Brom. I mean... You know,
with all due respect.
With all due respect. And 2, with a massive caveat of having seen the last minutes of that game, the last 8 minutes of that game yesterday. You would say that Spurs, even, you know, with the need for rotation, should be able to win all 6 of those games, right? I mean, that should be within their capabilities. I mean, you would say if they don't do that, they're going to be very disappointed. And they should be very disappointed.
If they don't win all of them, do you say?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a high bar.
I mean, it's not really, is it?
I think that's probably fair. Yeah, I think that probably is fair looking at those games. I mean, given as well, because they've got to set themselves up, haven't they? They've got then in the league, City at home, Chelsea away, Arsenal at home, and then Palace away, Liverpool away, then Leicester at home. God, that is then Wolves away.
And that big League Cup quarter final in there as well, the big one.
Oh, yeah, Stoke away on a wet, cold, freezing Tuesday night or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be an exciting time in the season. We've got lots and lots of games to come. That's all we've got time for on this week's podcast. Next week's podcast will be slightly later in the week because we'll do it after the Burnley game, which is next Monday evening. Otherwise, if you've got anything else that you want us to talk about or anything you want to ask us, please just tweet us. Otherwise, thanks very much to Charlie and James and producer Tom, and we'll be back again next week.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.